Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge. Today's guest is Don Carter. Don's career has been international and varied. He has lived and worked in Asia, Germany, and across the United States. He is currently Executive Vice President of People and Culture at Kiva.org. Kiva is a global nonprofit dedicated to expanding financial access worldwide. To say that Don's career has been varied is a slight understatement. He also served for a couple decades in the U.S. military, achieving the rank of captain. Those qualities of leadership and dedication have served Don well, including in being an entrepreneur, where he has led a couple of HR services firms. So in short, Don has lived and experienced the world through many lenses, and he is a committed HR professional with the education pedigree and professional designations to boot. Don could talk about anything within HR and talent management, so we are grateful that he has agreed to speak with us and have a conversation with me about how community involvement links to well-being and what leaders need to know and do. Welcome, Don.
Thank you. The part that I could talk about anything, I could talk about anyone whether or not you want to listen or if it's truly of substance, that's double. But I'm really glad to be here. Big fan of the podcast and everything that that we're trying to accomplish. So thank you for having me.
Amazing. I'm convinced, even if you aren't, Don. So today we're going to talk about how well-being links to community involvement or that very intimate tie between the two. But before we dig into that, Don, we at the Employee Well-Being Council focus on being human-centric. And so that's what we want to do right now. You're human. Let's center on you. Okay. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions from Marcel Proust's questionnaire. Marcel Proust was an essayist and author who felt that the answer to these questions will reveal your true essence. Okay. Are you ready, Don?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Okay. Which talent would you most like to have?
Wow. Which talent would I most like to have? I think it's probably the ability to just get into people's brains and to really understand what they're truly thinking. I think the ability to understand people's thoughts, to digest them, to understand real meaning and intent. I think that would be a great skill, not just as a leader, but just as a person, making sure that I'm able to provide the support or to respond to people the way that they really wish they were responded to. So I wish I had that superpower. I think many of my family wish that I had that superpower as well. My spouse alluded, so that's the one that I would select.
Yes, it's sort of the adage of walk in the other person's shoes, right? Absolutely. Being able to walk in the other person's shoes, how we would all do much better, I'm sure. Yeah. If you were to die, Don, and were to come back as a person or thing, what would it be?
Wow, these are really, really great thought-provoking questions. If I were to come back as a person or a thing, actually will opt to become an animal, and I think I would like to be probably a bird. I have a fascination with travel. I'd like to just experience different parts of the world, different sceneries. So I think the ability to be a bird and to be able to fly and migrate to different parts of the world. I don't know how far to fly, but that would definitely be my selection. And there's an element of just freedom of flight. I think there's just a beauty with flight. So that's what I'm going with.
And you wouldn't have to pay for checked-in luggage.
No, then, you know, the $25, $50 fee, I could skip that. So, yes, that's something I hadn't thought about. So, yeah, that's it. Thank you.
The savings. So, Don, let's come to our topic of community involvement, of which you are certainly well steeped in. So I want to talk a little bit of history in some ways. So once upon a time, organizations didn't give time off to support an individual's employee to participate in charitable community building activities. And then it became a bit of a PR exercise, if I may say, right? That the notion of organizations doing good was seen as great exposure to the public and showing that to the public. Now we realize over time, and I would say, you know, not just recently, it's probably been quite a while. Now we realize that it has a positive internal effect. How does community involvement increase well-being?
Oh, that's a great question. From my perspective, it increases it really in, I'll list three ways, but I think there's a multitude of ways. First, I think it really helps people in terms of creating this, sense of belonging and purpose beyond yourself. You know, I think all of us that went through the pandemic, several years ago, I think that reawakened our ability to try to connect to something more meaningful, something beyond ourselves, something beyond just our job and our work. And so I think community involvement, the sense of giving back, the sense of service, I think is very important. And I think with that, there's an element of just doing something different to help fulfill maybe pieces that work is not fulfilling for a person. So in many ways, it's a way to maybe increase either leadership skills or build some competencies that you're able to do in the work setting. So, whether it's participating on a board or a volunteerism event, or even something that's like a Habitat for Humanity or something that's more building or craft related, you're able to sharpen skills and anything that's more of a hobby for you that you can't do in the work setting, and then. I think the third is, I think it does get back to this sense of, you're part of the community. And so there's an expectation of, what does that really mean as a stakeholder to a community? Those of us, we live, we kind of drive in and out of communities, or if we work at home, we tend to be on our computers all day and calls, but there's a lot of things happening in the community, a lot of different needs and requests that, we're able to fill because there's so many different talented people that may live in a community and they may be able to lend their ways and skills in which you can continue to help that community to grow and prosper. So again, a lot of other ways that I think people want to give back and they like to give back, but those are just three that come to mind.
Those are fabulous. And perhaps we can pay homage to former President Carter. I worked at Habitat for Humanity for a couple of years and certainly saw the facts of also of what you said about leadership building and team building as it related to community involvement, right? When the folks would come out with their colleagues and it might be a vice president with somebody who is on the team or more junior, and now they're all swinging a hammer. And sometimes that associate can do that, right? Nail in that nail better than the vice president, or just having that ability to work side by side can have a really positive effect as well.
Absolutely. And former President Carter, rest in peace. It's just not only bringing that the power of the former presidency and the people that are around them to something like Habitat Humanity, but I think to your point, that's just a great example of a team, a community coming together to help support others in need. And I think he was one of the ultimate role models when it came to that, to your point.
Exactly. So experience, having said that, now I'm going to lead us to the next question, which was also partly my experience when I did spend some time trying to encourage organizations and leaders and team members to come out and swing a hammer, is that experience and research has shown that though many employees want their organizations to provide opportunities for community involvement, it is difficult for companies to actually get employees to participate. So sometimes in my experience, I would go into a corporation on their volunteer days, and that volunteer coordinator or manager who was trying to rally these thousands and thousands of people, trying to get even just 20 to come out and do something was sometimes difficult. So is there a disconnect between believing in doing good and frankly getting off the chair and actually doing it?
Yeah, it's a great point. Great question. There's a disconnect, but maybe in ways that people don't expect. And what I mean by that is I like to tell folks, I think we need to show grace in these types of situations? Because the disconnect is fundamentally, I think many people, all of us, we want to do more. You know, we know that it's inherently important. But the reality is in the work setting, you know, we are short on resources, maybe short on budget, short on FTEs or you know, staffing in many cases. So you're restricted in that sense. The workload perhaps hasn't changed. There's this increased demand to maybe do things faster. I know some refer to it as clock speed, to increase the clock speed. And so that, you know, you're dealing with that. And then maybe you have childcare issues, you know, somebody like me with aging parents, you know, situation or pet care. So, you know, as individuals, there's just a myriad of things that we're dealing with. And at the end of the day, as much as you would like to do something, you're just physically tired. And you may not have the physical or the mental capacity to support that volunteerism activity or that community activity. So sometimes what people see as apathy or just, you know, this sort of ambivalent sort of view of supporting a volunteerism or community activity, it really comes down to just the person not able to do that because they just don't have the energy to put into that, which then really becomes a question for, you know, community organizers, you know, NGOs and nonprofits like Arts Akiba, is how do you try to meet people where they're at so that they can support the things that are important to them, but in a maybe in a lower lift way. And so whether that's, you know, financial support, whether that's virtual support, you know, there's a myriad of ways that perhaps people can still support the community or an endeavor that's important to them. You know, if they just don't have, you know, the physical capacity to do it, or maybe they're just not in the right sort of headspace at that point in time. But that's a challenge. But like I said, I would look at it less as somebody not caring and more about it's just how do you fit that in the grand scheme of the limited time that they have.
I think that's a totally fair point, Don. And maybe I'll ask you to expand a little bit. Put on your HR hat now, as well as your, you know, there you go, put on your HR hat. So what advice would you give to leaders or to HR colleagues, departments? How, I mean, sort of practically, how do we meet people where they're at? Like, what is it? How are we going to discover where they're at, for example?
Yeah, so, you know, putting on my HR hat, and there's actually been experiences in organizations I've been with that I think have done this well, is you look at, this has to be something that we know it's important to the employee, but the employee will also view it favorably if they know that the company, their manager, their manager's manager, senior leadership is also supportive and are also involved in community and endeavors. So I think it's important for organizations to lead the way, and they can do that a couple of ways. One is, you know, really looking at, can you just dedicate a part of, you know, the work day, the work week, the work month, and let the employee just go off and do a community activity or community endeavor, whether that's individual, whether that's a part of a team building activity. That's one way that I think employees would be appreciated. The other is, you know, in cases where maybe there's an in-kind or a financial support to an organization, you know, is there a way to provide some sort of match? So for every hour of effort, volunteer effort that the employee gives or financial cushion, maybe there's some matching mechanism that the organization, the company can provide. And then I mentioned, you know, earlier, you know, I think senior leadership, I think it's important for senior leaders, executives to role model community support. And so by us doing that, again, the employee sees that number one, it's okay. And number two, like, you know, I see my senior executive out there, them, therefore, you know, I really should make more of a concerted effort to do this because they that executive is leading through example. A number of other ways, but I think those are some of the more successful things that I've seen that have worked well in this case.
For sure. And in particular, what I hear and I tease out of the responses as it relates to leadership is building a culture, right? If the senior leadership and then middle managers don't build this culture of giving, and that doesn't necessarily mean exclusively giving in financially, giving of time, giving of effort, if that is not role modeled and or the culture is not created, if your manager looks at you sideways when you go to do your volunteer hours, then that's not creating the culture of giving, of community giving.
Absolutely. I think you're spot on with that. And the other thing, again, we talked about this concept of low lift. It could even be simple as I'm bringing my team together for an offsite, or if everybody's virtual, I'm bringing them together for an onsite. Let's say that meeting is 3 days. I can carve out the front end or the back of that meeting, even if it's just several hours, that we can all get together. We can support a community activity. We can do a volunteerism event. And, you know, that's something, not only am I accomplishing, continuing to build my team and camaraderie, but I'm also continuing to get back to the community and doing something that's very important for that particular organization. So there's a myriad of ways that I think organizations can look at how do you blend this, in lower lift ways where you can get employees involved and employees feel like the organization, the company's behind me and they're supporting me in the things I want to do for the community.
That's right. And doing that together as a group, I certainly have seen it and experienced it also. And I can't remember which hormone or what's released. I think it's oxytocin or something good. Anyway, something good is released that makes that, right? Also, everyone, which relates to well-being, makes people feel better, feel good, right?
Absolutely.
So what are some of the fun and novel ways which you've seen employees get engaged on?
Wow. You know what? It's always a win-win when you can create an environment or a fun way where, you know, employees can get engaged and you put a little bit of a competitive spirit to it. So, you know, situations where if there's multiple offices or multiple locations where it's a little bit of a competition, like, you know, how many people can get engaged or how many volunteerism hours, you know, can you commit to a project? That's definitely one way to do it. The other is to employees who get engaged to really have them create stories and create content that can go on, the company's intranet or even things that can be published, like a LinkedIn article or something, where they're not only sharing what they're doing, but how it impacted them, how it, you know, supports the company, what they've learned from that. Again, just a fun, creative way for them to think about, ways in which they can tap into, people's energy or enthusiasm for wanting to create events. You know, the other thing, and we did this at Kiva a couple of times. We have an organization-wide. Well, let me take a step back. Kiva's fully distributed first, so we are fully remote. But we try to bring everybody together every 12 to 18 months for what we call Kiva Connect. And it's really just to reorientate everybody around our mission, our vision, our strategy. A lot of people meeting each other for the first time if they've been hired since the previous meeting. But one of the things we try to do as part of that is, again, we do very focused community activities, but we'll do things like we'll build skateboards or we'll build bikes. You're able to sort of, you're accomplishing something that needs to be done for that community group. But it's a fun way to do it because these are things that people like to have fun with. And then presenting, you know, these things to the community organizations, there's always a lot of excitement and energy around that. So, again, a lot of other things that are out there. But I do think, you know, we can think out of the box many times about, again, how to get people involved in community activity that are, you know, fun and creative and novel.
For sure. And depending on where you are localized, there's oftentimes also grassroots organizations who could really, right, use that support of the few hours, for example, to build those skateboards that we sometimes don't think about. We think about the larger, more established organizations, right, and they need our help as well, for sure. But I think with a little bit of research and some connectivity or even asking colleagues who live in that particular area, there's a lot of grassroots organizations who could use our help. So that's a great example, because I'm assuming that was not a global skateboard company that you built those for.
And no,
go ahead.
I was going to say it wasn't, but what was interesting, you know, so your first pass, you think, well, a skateboard, is that like the best use of the organization's time? But then this actually went to an organization where there's just a lot of kids that just they don't. You know, the parents, their family don't have the financial resources to get something as simple as a skateboard for that child and the impact that that skateboard made, you know, in this particular case with that organization, with that community, you know, it was really eye-opening when you think about, you know, something that like that, that could have such an impact on a child's life.
For sure. And it gets them off the screen and outside. That would be my first, right? Let's go do it. As anything we can get, you know, to have young people not be on screens, perhaps, is a good thing in interacting outside.
Absolutely. I'm still learning that in my household. So
I heard one could turn off the internet, the Wi-Fi. Can't be done.
Yeah. It turns it off for the rest of us, we're practicing selective turning it off. So that's our strategy now.
Fair enough. What does community involvement mean in a global context in which we live? In particular, I mean, Kiva is a great example also of being a global organization.
Yeah, great question. I think, you know, globally, it takes on a different meaning because, again, I think much of what we talked about are examples that I shared, maybe are sort of local efforts, local volunteerism. Habitat Humanity is more, you know, national and global. And when you think about global, you know, Kiva, for example, you know, we support forcibly displaced refugees. We support communities that are impacted by climate change. We support women borrowers who are either, you know, locked out of the traditional financial system or underbanked or just don't have the access to financial capital, as well as systemically marginalized entrepreneurs who have fantastic ideals to build business, the same thing, they're just locked out. So globally, you know, it really is a different sort of effort, especially when you think about what people have access to and they don't have access to, and really what will make the most difference in that person's lives. Many places around the world, right, you have, you know, water shortages or, you know, lack of clean available water, for example. So, you know, community efforts and volunteerism efforts to, you know, support projects that bring the ability, that bring, you know, clean water solutions to areas, I think, are important. Education, I think, is consistent around the world. Same efforts to support, you know, increased education and better education and the resources, the fundamental resources that, you know, the children and young adults need for their education, and I think is important. So there are things that are just universal that we see around the world, again, the education and things like that. And then there's things that are specific to maybe certain parts of the world where, you know, the point that I'd make here is for organizations that have a centralized, you know, community function, it's less about trying to put out a mandate of how, you know, community support or volunteerism should work consistently, but it's really, you know, setting a framework for maybe the themes or the areas that, you know, we support, and then really letting the local teams determine what's best and how to utilize either, you know, those volunteerism campaigns or if there's resources behind it, because they're closest to what's going to have the most impact in their local communities. We, you know, it's an overused phrase or expression, but, you know, it's, you know, think global, but act local. I think the same thing sort of applies here when we think about, you know, community involvement on a global basis.
Absolutely. I mean, I would agree. And I think the theme perspective is important in this day and age, in particular, even within a country, those individuals may come from other countries or have, you know, home countries and interest in other places in the world. And so being able to direct, whether, again, it's my time or my energy or my money, how I wish to, and if there's a matching program, that's great by the organization, but right underneath an umbrella theme, especially if the organization is doing any kind of matching or allowing for that time off, I can understand the mix of the two. And so we've moved away, and I think generally you would agree, John, that we've moved away from a world where it's very super prescriptive by organizations, because that generally doesn't really work anymore, especially with the younger generations.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And then I also think that it's important for all generations. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, community support, it's just really having, in addition to supporting the community or volunteerism effort or whatever is important, But really to try to understand that mission and that impact and really hear the stories behind the work that organizations are doing. Because I think we sometimes have a tendency maybe to do our 4 hours or 8 hours or half day and feel good about it, as we should. But I think the ability to think, you know, what happens beyond those 4 hours or 8 hours or some of the other things that, you know, community groups and organizations are dealing with, and to try to stay in contact as best as we can, because even it could be something as, you know, maybe an hour here, hour down the road, and even that just limited amount of time commitments for these organizations.
Amazing. And I love the idea of learning beyond, I don't know if I'm phrasing it right, but sort of learning beyond the doing, right? So I go do my 4 hours and I know the immediate impact because I've packed bags of canned goods or, you know, pantries or so, but understanding the context of food insecurity and how this organization, right, helps to alleviate food insecurity or what type of food insecurity is my community or lack of access to your drinking water. So I really appreciate that also that individuals should take it upon themselves to understand the context within which they're also doing their involvement and helping to shape that. So you touched on it a bit, I think, in some ways in your previous answer, but I'm going to ask you, regardless, I'm going to still ask you this question, and maybe you can expand on it a bit. So at the council, as you know, we want to embed and ensure that inclusion and equity really is embedded across all talent management practices. So what check and balances should we have to ensure that we are being inclusive and equitable in the way and how organizations structure community involvement?
Yeah, great question as well. I think it's really trying to have as many inclusive voices as possible as, opportunities are being evaluated. I think, again, there's always positive intent in terms of, you know, aligning and for the bigger organizations, aligning sort of, you know, the effort from a corporate social responsibility and somewhat from an ESG perspective to the organization's mission with, you know, the community groups that are complementary to what the organization does or their target markets. But beyond that, I think it's really important to really look at, are we getting, employee resource groups involved? If we have inclusion committees or inclusion councils, you know, do they have a voice? Do they have input? Not that it's consensus decision-making, but it's at least all the different voices, you know, do we have the ability to make sure that those voices and those inputs are heard before we make decisions in terms of what we're going to support? What I've seen in some cases, not a lot of cases, but what I've seen in some cases is that, you know, we have a tendency, whether it's a senior executive or just historical legacy, there's certain organizations because we physically sit in this town, this organization is nearby or in the same town, and therefore we give all our support to that organization. And there's nothing wrong with that at all, but there could any employees or stakeholders that live in other areas that have additional sort of community needs. And so it's the ability of, you know, are we taking in those inputs, and are we diversifying kind of what we're looking at, still complementing the things that are important to the organization, but they also support different stakeholders' desires as well, where they think, you know, community resources can go. And the last point I'd make on this is, which is why I think it's important to have inclusive voices. You know, part of what we do at Kiva, you know, one of the areas is, again, systemically marginalized, entrepreneurs and business owners. This is an area where I think there's still a continued need for more support. Not just, you know, community support in terms of volunteers or anything like that, but just patronage and community supporting these businesses. And that's where I think, you know, larger organizations, through the inputs that they have from these inclusive voices, they'll have the ability to understand, you know, where those opportunities to support, you know, systemically marginalized businesses or community groups that may not sit in their local town, but employees sit in that town or other stakeholders are a part of that town where that organization sits. So again, it's really about just making sure that There's diversity of thought, diversity of opinion, and inclusiveness of, you know, soliciting different ways in which an organization can support the community. I think that's important.
It's important from a normative standpoint, and it's smart because that's how you're going to get employee buy-in, right? If it's sort of made, again, as we said, prescriptively or without drawing in, and again, with good intent, decisions are made, but when we haven't listened potentially to those other voices, it may spark us to think and say, oh, that's right, right? A large population or a significant population of our employee base comes from X or belongs to this particular group. And so if we, you know, we would like to obviously support their perspectives as well. And the other piece that I heard you that I feel is an undertone of what you're saying is also that these things are dynamic.
Yes.
They're not static, right? So whether it is, and I don't know what the right rhythm or if there is a right rhythm, whether it's yearly or bi-yearly, doing a reevaluation of not only the organizational philosophy, perhaps, or mandate, but also including those voices again, getting more feedback, continuous feedback from those inclusive voices to ensure that you're really targeting and listening to various stakeholders.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I think in fairness, I think a lot of organizations do a good job of doing that. I think, you know, what we're talking about, or at least the advice or counsel that I'm giving is don't give that up. I think continue to do that, continue to seek out these different voices so that there's inclusiveness in, you know, the thinking around, you know, what that community support strategy should look like.
Exactly. So it's like in the old training formula of stop, start, continue, it's a continue. First and foremost,
it's a continue.
So we want to end. I mean, I have a couple more Bruce questions for you at the end, but just from a real factual standpoint, we want to end this podcast with very practical advice for our listeners. So what are one or two things that I am going to do today as a leader in supporting my team members to get involved in community giving?
Practical advice. I think number one is just really assessing. Self-assessment or just ask the team point blank, do they feel like they have the time and space to support, you know, community endeavors? I think that's probably top of mind and really solicit that feedback. Two, I would look at sort of low lift opportunities. If I'm bringing the team together, I'm going to try to schedule something, either the front end, the back end, or at some point in that multi-day meeting, if that's what it calls for. If I'm not bringing the team together, maybe I'm going to schedule something every quarter or twice a year or whatever I can fit in,
right,
so that I can urge people to participate either individually if they're geographically dispersed, or if I have the team close by, then I want to pull them together in a sort of a central sort of activity. And then I think the third one is I'm going to role model so that the team knows that it's okay and it's just not me saying it's okay, right, to do this. But I'm going to demonstrate that it's okay to do this. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to show them the things that I support. Maybe I'm not going to be as public as writing it on the company intranet, but I'll send a communication on Slack or Teams or whatever, you know, internal I have for my team. And I'll just share my thoughts and what I learned, you know, my takeaways. And by the way, the other thing that I think has come out of the pandemic is you see a lot more openness and vulnerability in terms of leaders and how leaders do things and how they respond to things on LinkedIn, for example. And so you see a lot of stories of leaders and what they're supporting and what it then. And you see them publishing these stories on LinkedIn. And I think it's very eye-opening because we didn't see that, you know, 5-10 years ago, right? It was always about business, strategy. But it's more about what's happening with my family or what's happening with the things that I care about or things that I want to support. And it's sort of that personalization that we're now seeing in the workplace. We're seeing that personalization as a part of what it means to be a leader. And so that's kind of the third thing. And the practical, you know, advice is I would personalize what community means to me through demonstrating what I'm doing and then sharing that with my employees.
I think that's great. Amazing. Don, I'm going to wrap up our conversation with a couple more Proust questions. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be?
Oh gosh, there's so many things. It's hard to pick one. I think the one thing that I would change is I have FOMO to the nth degree, fear of missing out. And so I'm one where I get fascinated by so many things, and then I like to learn and I like to absorb. And my problem is I will start to learn and absorb something, and then something else will catch my eye, and then I'll stop and I'll jump on that. And so I probably would just change, like, let's just do something and get it done before you go on to the next thing. I have all these unfinished projects and tasks and learnings. So I'm a bit of a FOMO person. So I think that's the one thing that I would change about myself.
I think I'm similar, though. My friends and family would call it my squirrel syndrome.
Yes, that's probably a better term.
One or the other. But we should just call ourselves dabblers. I like to dabble.
Yeah. I thank you. That's probably a better way of saying it, but I dabble too much. So
fair enough. You dabble too much. And last but not least, who are your heroes in real life?
Oh, that's an easy one. My mom is she's just an amazing, amazing woman. I could go on 30 minutes and just talk about all the wonderful things about my mom, but one of the things that she instilled in me and my brothers and sisters was just hard work, perseverance, in spite of, whatever the obstacle challenges are. Her saying is, you can that you're dealt, right? You don't discard, you don't ask for a new set of cards. It's like your cards are your cards. How do you optimize the hand that you have? And I think it's that sort of thinking, that resilience that inspires me today. But just a wonderful lady. She's hitting 91 here shortly, but she's just role model in so many ways. So that's without a doubt, that's my number one role model.
She sounds like a wise and amazing woman who did a great job raising at least this son that I've met, and probably your siblings as well.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
On behalf of the Employee Wellbeing Council, we are delighted and thankful that you decided to join me in this conversation. Thanks, Don.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Wellbeing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.